This file is a digital copy of a tape recording made of an interview that Dave Taylor had with Dick Moore, who was the overseer of Henry Ford's Lovett Hall in Dearborn, Michigan. The occasion of the interview was a dance that Al Brundage and Dave Taylor arranged in 1980, in recognition of the part that Ford and Lovett Hall played in the history of square dancing. The tape recording is from the collection of the Square Dance Foundation of New England.
You know, that what seemed to me a very sad story to a very glorious start, you know, it's followed all with you, but it seemed as it, as Mr. Ford, when he passed away, that the Ford family, it sounded like he had left a type of legacy that he wanted continued, but that the people, either in the family or in the management end, I wouldn't say they purposely went in, according to what I read, and tried to stop it, but it was just a slow deterioration where they absolutely were not behind it or something. That scene.
Well, they had very little to do with anything. I think it's the way their will and various things of that nature were set up that did more to kill the legend, if you will,
than
anything else.
I suppose maybe it might be.
I've been associated with the Ford family since I was 7. And my wife, just about the same.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Do you want to get over some of the heavy stuff first?
Sure, whatever you think.
Let me. I did this. This was all you might call it part of a research project between Lovett, Mr. Ford, and myself. Lovett and I are doing all the work, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But. We had to be sure of our facts. And unfortunately, it was so lengthy, we had to leave out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this will give you an idea of how the whole damn thing started.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure. This is something you put together and documented or something for this type of thing?
Throughout all of the annals of history, man has expressed himself in the arts. The arts include the dance. And this expression of art is as varied as literature, music, painting, sculpture, etc. Each step or movement in dancing has meaning to the person who first originated the particular movement. Every culture and every country of the world has dances which are indigenous to their lifestyle. American dancing is naturally a potpourri of the many nations which make up the culture of America. Early American dancing is a set series of movements, and because of this, many dances are organized into sets, or called a set. Some of these sets are very stylized. Others are a loose organization of steps. Dancing during the colonial days of America was a very fixed series of steps. These colonial dances have always been fascinating to those who danced them and caught the attention of a famous American, Mr. Henry Ford, the Elder. As with many of his enthusiasms, Henry Ford followed through thoroughly with one which caught his fancy. He and his wife organized old-fashioned dance parties before World War I. In 1923, Ford purchased historic Wayside Inn in Sudbury, Massachusetts. There they organized early American dances as part of the entertainment program. The dancing master of Wayside Inn was Mr. Benjamin B. Lovett. To publicize his hobby, Mr. Ford invited 200 Ohio and Michigan dancing instructors to Dearborn to Virginia Reel, Shadish, Vasulian, Gavotte, Ripple, Oxford Minuet, and other almost forgotten steps. In addition, the industrialist arranged for Mr. Lovett to teach dancing to Durbin school children. For myself, I began my dancing career at the age of 6 or 7 years of age in about 1927 under Mr. Lovett's tutelage.
Did you go home?
Old-fashioned dancing became the rage. Newspapers carried detailed instructions covering an entire page, and 34 institutions of higher learning, including such famous names as Radcliffe College, Stevens College, Temple University, and the Universities of Michigan, North Carolina, and Georgia, added early American dancing to their curricula. Mr. Ford sent Mr. Lovett on a junket to supervise the teaching. After the spring of 1926, early American dancing pretty much lost its popularity. But Mr. Ford continued to hold dances and parties in Durbin until the early 1940s. During the 1940s, the city of Durbin became very active in the early American dancing field, and organized a number of groups in 1943. The dancing master for the city of Durbin was Richard R. Dickmore, who was a dance caller and instructor for the Durbin Recreation Department. Mr. Moore was a former pupil of Mr. Lovett's and eventually became his assistant. He was a member of the American Federation of Musicians and the Dance Masters of America, and is one of the few men that can teach, call, and play for the dancing. Mr. Moore was the Midwest's outstanding teacher of early American square dancing, which owes its origin to the British and French courts, and was brought to this country by the colonists. Mr. Moore worked very closely with Mr. Lovett and Mr. Ford in studying the origins of these dances and their music. A typical evening of dancing with Mr. Ford and or Mr. Lovett will find gavottes, shashishes, mazurkas, minuets, and many other types of round dances on the program, as well as square dances. Now, an interesting fact is that when the dances were first brought to this country from overseas, there was no such thing as a collar. The dance master was intended for one purpose, and that was to teach the round dances and quadrilles of the times to those who did not know them. You were expected to be familiar with the dance and music before setting foot on a dance floor. As time went on, and more people became interested, the dance master was sometimes called a prompter because he would get up on a platform with the musicians and from time to time would prompt the dancers so that they might get reorganized if they were having difficulty. As people migrated west, they were often without this prompter, and ask a member of the group who could recall the dance patterns to call them out to the dancers. Also, with the migration west, originated the legends of the trek, and the caller would often try to use these legends, which had been put to music, and weave them into the story of the dance. So singing calls were originated. The Durbin Recreation Groups, early American dancing groups, perhaps I should say, which had an active adult membership of over 350 couples who danced once a week. There was only one hall in Durban large enough to accommodate all the people, and that was available only once a month. So we divided into neighborhood groups. These neighborhood groups met in the local schools. And then, once a month, the groups would get together for a formal ball at the Fort Naval Armory, where over 600 persons would take to the floor at one time for quadrilles and round dancing. We also occasionally danced on the green, a special program of dances attended by Mr. and Mrs. Henry Ford at Ford Field in Dearborn. A typical dance evening at the Recreation Building in Greenfield Village, sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Ford, and being called by Mr. Lovett, would include a program of dances such as Keynote Schottische, Canadian Barn Dance, Billy Boy, Gunning's Quadrille, Fascination, Varsuvian Waltz, Red River Valley, Columbine Mazurka, My Little Girl, Nellie Bly, Oh Susanna, then an intermission. This was usually followed by a round dance of some sort, perhaps a waltz or a foxtrot, then the Texas Double Star, French Quadrille, New Mexico Star, Waltz of the Bells, Devil's Britches, Double Chasse, then all would join in singing God Bless America and dance a closing waltz. Most of the early American dance parties were held with the women wearing formal gowns and men in dark suits. Corsages were the order of the day, and the evening was made up of waltzes and quadrilles, polkas and schottisches, as mentioned above. Whether dancing in beautiful Lovett Hall in Greenfield Village to a program of schottisches and quadrilles, or dancing at a large square dance convention, or at a small gathering of a local group, the feeling of participating in a form of dance that has been with us over the centuries is still exciting. Sincerely, Dick Moore, the Ford Collar.
No, that's...
Yeah, it's very good.
It's just intended to give a very quick, fast rundown. You know, a lot of people think, unfortunately, that square dancing only started a matter of a few years ago.
That's right. Most people that I talk to think it started after World War II.
Well, back in the old days, when every moneyed family that came to this country had their own resident dance caller. I should say dance teacher. And you had to know, I mean, the dances were so damned intricate, you had to know definitely what you're doing or you could be in deep trouble. In fact, things were so controlled back in those days that you wouldn't even be asked to attend a dance unless you'd had formal training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On the tape, I heard you say that Benjamin and Lovett was at the inn, Wayside Inn out.
Yeah.
And it was, and I read in the archives that, you know, Mr. Ford purchased that. He used to like to go out there, and I guess he was impressed with Benjamin Lovett. And then he more or less financially persuaded Benjamin Lovett to come here, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, he, as a matter of fact, in order to get Lovett, he had to buy the inn. You want to really know the true story.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that didn't bother Henry back at that time. He had some $20 billion in his personal bank account. That's not a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't million, it was billion.
Billion.
The last billionaire. I wrote a book about him, you know, way back then. But buying the inn was really nothing. And, mm-hmm. and then, of course, he brought it up to snuff to where it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
But Lovett only came in, well, he insisted on coming out here on a 2-month contract. And as far as I could figure, he retired. I called for his... 26 years.
26 years on a 2-month contract.
Yeah. Not bad.
No. I suppose it's hard to equate with today's inflation, but would you say he was rather well paid?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yeah, he was the top executive in the company. That was his field.
Mm-hmm. During the Depression, I know for a fact that he was getting about $1,000 a month.
$1,000 a month during the Depression?
During the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Which was darn good money for...
Oh, I imagine, because if people could find a job, they were working for $15 or $20 a week, weren't they?
Yeah, Arnold lived right across the street from Ben.
Yeah. When he would go with Mr. Lovett to Georgia, my mother and dad and I would move into their house, into Lovett's house, and take care of the dog.
I see.
Gone, so.
I read in that he went to Georgia quite often to help the University of Georgia or one of the schools.
No.
Well, he might have done that too. Mr. Ford down there.
Oh.
Mr. Ford Plantation.
Well, he had us to do the work at the universities, teaching.
Yes.
But, that was his winter home.
Oh, I see. He had a home in Georgia.
Plantation.
Yes. So I wanted to dance down
there. I'm not with it today. I'm not with it today.
Barron?
Hill.
Richmond Hill. With Mr. Ford's plantation.
Yeah.
I see.
Now, look, you're going to get put in the bedroom if you don't stop it.
We'll put him in there then. You're going to lose your train of thought.
Yeah.
I know. I asked. I had him out.
I remember many years ago when, just by word of mouth, when I got into square dancing, that the people used to tell me that Benjamin Lovett was a very strong personality, very strong leader type with the people. That when the story I heard is when he instructed the people to dance, he also instructed them in courtesies and manners the story I heard was that he actually told the ladies that while they were at his dance, they were not to cross their legs at the knee and this type of thing.
Well, yes, certainly. Do you have an invitation there to one of the dances?
No.
If you'll notice, it doesn't say anything about a dance, does it?
You're cordially invited to attend a class.
Yes.
In old-fashioned dancing, sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Henry Ford. And it gives a date, Recreation Building, Greenfield Village.
See, those were held...
1939.
Those were held every Friday night.
I see.
It was my job and my wife's job to be there. We were buffers between he and the less experienced dancers.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when Mr. Ford would form... his set. There's over 200 people there, and it's always difficult to control a crowd that size.
Mm-hmm.
And they would all try to get into his set.
Gee.
Well, we were there to ward them off to dance in the set, and if there was an inexperienced couple that the Fords themselves had asked, we had pushed them around. Make sure they didn't.
Things haven't changed too much in that respect.
Don't push them around.
Right.
But, you see, I was a member of what was called his social staff.
Mm-hmm.
And our job was to send invitations to the dances and so on. And new people received a little communique inside their invitation that told them what to wear, what not to wear, what shoes to wear. In other words, don't wear any shoes that have nails in them.
Because of the floor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. See, the floor in Lovett Hall was teak wood. Mm. Big, beautiful boards, you know, from his plantation in South America. And there was a fellow there that had nothing to do but to polish that floor.
That was his entire
Eight
job?
8 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Whether it was used or not?
Yeah. Of course.
It was, of course, it was used every Friday night.
Ever.
And we had classes there from school. We had our dancing class.
And we, the new dance teachers, we'd work with them up there every day during the week.
When Benjamin Lovett came here, it sounds to me like you say his job seemed to be more like training you and the other dance masters, is that right? And you actually did the training of the dancers, is that how it went down?
No. How can I explain it? I trained the dance teachers.
I see. Because you were his assistant.
Yeah. And the dance master in my own right. So that entitled me to certain privileges, mainly do as little as possible.
That's great.
But the dance teachers would take care of the teaching of any guests that were there for the first time. I'll give you, for instance, a fellow by the name of Ferguson Tractors.
Mm.
Brought his tractor over from England. Eventually, he got gypped out of it. But neither here nor there, it's business. And the other dance teachers had their own schedules. I wish I could show you one. Every day they had a different schedule. I went to a different school, and all day. Now they might go to 4 or 5 schools in one day, depending on how many classes that school had. There were country schools, the four schools out in the country, Macon, Dundee, Tecumseh, all these, Chicago school system. They'd send a couple of teachers and musicians to Chicago, for instance, and down into Ohio and all over.
Mr. Ford paid for all this?
Oh, yes. All the schools had to do was request social training. That was the key word. It wasn't dancing.
Social studies.
Dancing was used as a means to an end. Taught to set table, how to sit, cross ankles, you know,
mm-hmm.
cross your ankles, how to conduct themselves in a ballroom. Just the social arts, I guess you'd call it. That's what they were taught and they were supposed to teach.
When Benjamin Lovett came here then...
he was a social arbiter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the members of the archives over there said to me, you'll have a little trouble finding any amount of written material on Benjamin Lovett. That's why he gave me your phone number. He said you would know more about him than anyone, and he said the reason you would find difficult to find written material is that Mr. Ford didn't particularly care to have anyone who worked for him involved in a great deal of publicity.
Do you find very few pictures of Mr. Lovett?
I think it went a lot further.
Is that right?
Lovett was a very self-contained man himself. Well, he drove a big Lincoln all the time, and all the trappings that went with it, you wouldn't find his picture in the papers or anything of that nature. I probably have, I think I have one of two known photographs of him.
The only one I've ever seen is the one in the book Good Morning, I guess he was.
Yeah, he was in there using Mrs. Lovett as a partner. Right. Are you talking about the big book or the little one?
The little book. I have, yeah. I've never seen the big book.
Oh.
It's the same. The big book is the same.
No, it's more. A lot more in it, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I thought it was just a large.
No, the large book is meant for the use of people who are going to attempt to call a square dance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite detailed. Now, on the other hand, there's a lot of dances that aren't in there because they're too difficult to handle.
So when Benjamin Lovett came here, then he had, I guess at first, absolutely nothing to work with. He had to just start from...
Oh, yeah. One of the first things he did was start teaching in the different schools. Now, Ford sent him out. And because when the Durbin schools found this was available to them and them only, why, they jumped right on the old bandwagon, you know.
Sure.
And Ben did quite a bit of teaching on his own then. Well, he organized the Early American Orchestra, and that's why I say he had to get busy and research both the music and the calls.
That's an interesting
point. Dances.
Your wife might remember, I didn't bring the things I went through there because I didn't, first I flew over here, and secondly that I didn't want to clutter up your home, but you might remember I said to you, one of the fellows, and his name escapes me now, they have several of the ex-Ford executives who used to attend these dances, and if you read the accounts, you'd have to really go through it to find anything about Benjamin Lovett. But when you did, there were several conflicting accounts in which one would think he was just absolutely a great dance master. One man in that account, and I remember I mentioned it to you on the phone, and of course you said that isn't true, said that Benjamin Lovett really had tricked Mr. Ford, that he really didn't know very much at all about dancing when he's out in Massachusetts. And when he had gotten this job, he had to research like crazy to come up with the things that he was responsible for.
He had to research and come up with a type of dances that Henry would be interested in and that the old man could do himself.
Was that a problem?
Ben was a dance master, but he passed his exam in ballet. I passed mine they were eager enough, the committee, to see what this early American dancing thing was all about. But I couldn't take an examination on that. I had to take it on ballroom dancing.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. When you say Mr. Ford, was there a problem with his capabilities?
No.
He was a good dancer?
Question of what he wanted to dance.
I think he was a good dancer.
Yes, I know I didn't have to dance with him.
You had to dance with him, so you know.
I would call him a vigorous dancer.
Very.
I wouldn't call him a good one.
Very active. I mean, very.
Yeah.
I think for his age, he was a
he
good.
He bounced dancer. Around.
That's interesting. Benjamin Lovett, then you said, trained quite a few of the people as he did. He worked with you. You said you started with him when you were 7 years old? Or
yeah.
And Benjamin Lovett taught you to dance at
seven? Yes. Now, see, you have to understand this. He had a series of classes organized by that time that would meet over in the engineering lab,
mm-hmm.
the one that faced the ponds over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Depending on your age, you'd go to different classes. Like the older kids, how old would you say, would go at night?
High school kids.
Yeah. And other ages would go Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Depending on your age, you'd go to different classes. Like the older kids, how old would you say, would go at night?
High school kids.
Yeah. And other ages would go Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you were younger, you went during the day.
Yeah, after school, not Sunday. Yeah.
Not Sunday.
After school. Yeah.
Saturdays are after school?
Saturdays after school.
That's right. And that was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It all started out with the executive's children. And then it was expanded. I know the only reason I got in is because my dad was a Ford executive.
Oh.
I never would have gotten in, but your dad wasn't an executive, and you made it.
Of course, I was a neighbor of Mr. Lovett, so that's probably how I first got
Mr. Lovett lived here in Dearborn?
Yeah, he lived over in the Ford home section.
Ford built that whole group of homes south of Michigan.
South of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
It's between military and Nahalon. There's a whole area in there that he built. Homes. I don't know, it was about five or six different models. And then there
and most of the people worked in the engineering lab or the roof.
Well, if you were, you know, seven when you started then, was Mr. Lovett at that time working alone, or did he have the staff like he did?
No, he worked alone, pretty much, yeah.
And then it was later on he developed the staff?
Yeah. It kind of just all fell in line.
Mm-hmm. It worked out if you were the, he was the head man, of course, you were his assistant. Then how many other, would you say?
Well, there was a considerable period of time.
I would imagine. If you said, yeah.
Yeah, because we both started going off school, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
As he grew up, he started guiding in the village. And weekends, he worked there, and then Mr. Lovett brought him into the dancing part so that he was out of the guiding, was into the dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody said something to him, I know.
But do they have any set number of lessons or any plateaus that they would reach?
Yeah.
It was my age group.
Well, now, wait a minute. You're talking about when a dance teacher went out into the Detroit schools or into the country schools.
Right.
Hmm? Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we certainly had a program, I mean, as far as manners were concerned. And we'd relieve the monotony by having, we teach dancing in between. And then we didn't have to hit a certain plateau.
They said,
not really. We expected performance, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the big thing was it was so popular with kids. I mean, back then, no matter where we went. Oh, man. Detroit schools, big.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd say, well, all right, now we're going to have to go back and talk this over with Mr. Lovett in the village, and you're not performing up to par, and we'll just have to see whether or not we'll be back next week.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'd let them sit on their fannies for a week. Had the teacher take them into, it was always in the gymnasium, and let them sit on their fannies for a week.
What about the adults? Was there a class or a training program for adults?
Are you speaking now of the Ford executives that would
well,
go to
any
his private parties?
Yes, I read about them. Yeah, the Ford executives were they required to? They were not required. I saw in there that Ford didn't exactly require them, but they understood that.
Oh, that's
it,
true.
It was something he wanted.
Well, for instance, I'm a member of the Society of Automotive Engineers. He felt, everybody had more than one hat.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work over in the powerhouse, the mansion, up in the little roomy and set aside for experimental engineering stuff. And this guy expected me to be half engineer, half what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so he arranged for my education and got me enrolled in the Society of Automotive Engineers and had a certain amount of clout.
Mm-hmm.
No, a suggestion from the old man was a command.
I would imagine.
There's no two ways about it. He said, I think you ought to be an engineer so you can be of more use to me around here. Bingo, that was it. He said, yes, sir, Mr. Ford, what do I do first?
Mm-hmm. Well, then the executives, did they learn just by going to the dances as opposed to going to a class?
No, the executives had to. I started to tell you about this.
Ferguson.
I had to take him in hand and teach him for weeks. He and Mrs. Ferguson and the two kids. They had the Lovett Hall all to themselves.
Personal instruction.
Yeah. No, they would have classes set up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Same as they did for the little kids.
Do you like a cup of coffee?
That would be very nice. Appreciate it.
Do you take sugar and cream?
Just black, nothing. It's,
See, first they started out with some intimate friends over at the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a ballroom there. Not a very big one for me, because it wasn't. It was just for his way he visualized it. Just his intimate friends. And then they would say, you know, can you bring so-and-so?
Thank you.
Well, geez, it got too big. Mm-hmm. No time at all. So then he moved over to the engineering lab and put up these big curtains. Curtained off a big hunk of the engineering lab. And that's where they had the children from Dearborn and eventually from all over would come there. And as I say, it was just a great big huge curtain affair. And the engineers are sitting outside or in an office down a little ways from there, and you have to listen to the gavotte and the waltzes and all the rest of it, you see. So, and a lot of them peeking there, hanging around there, because a lot of them could see the handwriting on the wall. So, eventually,
if you wanted to get anywhere with Henry Ford, you better get involved in it, see?
That's right.
We mentioned Al Hards before. You know, I used to have a square dance radio program here in Detroit on WJLB.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I did at that time was the very first program, I had someone from the Henry Ford Museum who was not involved in the dancing at all. A historian came out and gave us a little talk on it. And to follow it up, since I knew Al Hards, I had Al Hards come out. And Al Hards told me the story. That's why I'm not changing the subject. He told me the story of this laboratory you told me about. That's where he met Mr. Ford. He was on the other side.
Yeah.
I guess involved in that. And he said he happened to walk by, and Henry Ford gave him kind of a sharp look. He said, do you have a handkerchief? And Al said, yes. He said, would you give it to me? Give it to him. And he wiped his nose. He had evidently some ink or something on his nose from drawing. I don't know what it was. And he said, the end result of that was, I guess, some 22 years over at the Belisle. He was at the yacht club, was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he says he had to take some training, and I didn't have to, of course. As you said, you see the writing on the wall. Yeah. He began to work in, through the system and learn how to become a dance instructor.
You know, in Lovett's letter there, it mentioned about being put on the, where did he put it?
Something up the top or not.
He was on the payroll or something. Well,
based around salary.
Yeah. Well, what he actually meant by that, he wasn't saying it, was his personal payroll. When I don't believe Al was ever on it, but Lovett, for instance, was on his personal payroll. There were people all over the place, worked around the village and in the museum, and that meant getting on his personal payroll, which was both good and bad.
You're talking about Mr. Ford's personal.
Yes. Yes, I can understand.
Yeah.
So Mr. Ford
didn't pay well, but it was very prestigious.
I see. That's why it was good and bad. Okay. I guess in that respect, he was, what would you say, almost a...
Yeah.
From one aspect to the other, like a pendulum, because they say he would be extremely generous in certain areas and also very tight-fisted in others, and it didn't seem to make any rhyme or reason why. It just, his whims. I suppose the laboratory got too cumbersome, and they built Benjamin Levitt Hall, huh?
Yeah. Well, they called it the recreation building.
A wedding present for Mr. Ford. See, that's beautiful.
Mrs. Ford, I dropped it once. It just blew me off.
Yeah.
Mrs. Ford went over to the museum and picked it right out of the museum.
Oh, it's one of the pieces there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Antique.
I imagine it's very valuable.
Yeah.
Did you want to hear some different records?
I sure would. Yeah, that'd be great.
You name it now. All I can do is suggest.
Yeah, let's just, I'll just finish a little bit here with Mr. Lovett moving on there. Just so that I have my facts right, because as I talk to both of you, I see, you know, you have, in my opinion at least, you know, the absolute word on it, and I read little discrepancies from the little bit that I read over there, but I did read something I thought was fascinating, that evidently the program that you worked on with Mr. Lovett, where eventually they went into these schools and went to colleges, and Mr. Ford had instructions printed in the newspapers and started a radio program in Chicago.
Right.
And that, as I understand it, this radio program, the people could see the instructions in the paper, is that right, and then try to work with them, and if they listened to this radio program, that they could do a fair amount of dancing, is that correct?
No.
Okay, then I misinterpreted. See, that's why I wanted to ask you.
No. Because actually the program was done, what did you call it, there in the studio. They're kind of sealed off.
Yeah, I understand.
Is that what?
No, I meant could the people at home practice?
At home.
Yeah, at home. Could they practice from the instructions in the newspaper? Could they practice what was being done on the radio?
You know that'd be darn hard.
Yes, I know.
Because what's on the radio was not the kind of music you'd want to practice with. And when it went out over the air, it went coast to coast.
Right.
They'd play, you know, play an hour's program, and that was for the East Coast, and then they'd have to wait an hour and play another program. Well, the same program over again. That's for the West Coast.
Right. And evidently, and I believe you had told me, I didn't know that radio program originated in Chicago.
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. And it was every week.
Yeah.
So I would imagine...
For a while.
Mr. Lovett would have to do an awful amount of traveling, would he?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was used to that. And, you know, Ford had another home in Fort Myers, Florida, same street, just down the street from Edison.
Mm-hmm.
They're great buddies. The mansion was Edison's home away from home.
Mm-hmm.
He had a suite of rooms named after
him. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to the mansion at all?
I've never been to the mansion, no. I've been only to the museum. And
I didn't know what you had for lunch today in mind, Florence.
I thought maybe I could take you out to lunch.
Maybe we could just drop into the mansion.
Oh, that would be very nice.
Oh, we could have lunch there.
Oh, I see. Sure.
We can have lunch there. And it's not very expensive. I mean,
I'm
it's cafeteria style.
That would be very nice.
No. No, but Oh, all right. You go up to get the... What the hell difference?
They had a salad bar.
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's called the pool because it's made where they had their swimming pool. You see, when the archives were brought over into the mansion after they died, then they filled
the archives died? I wish.
After the Forest died, they filled in the swimming pool.
Yeah, brought up foundry sand, 4 inches of concrete on top of that. Yeah. Put their file cabinets in there.
Beautiful swimming pool.
Ruined a beautiful... I don't think it's Olympic size, but it's an oversized pool, anyway.
I'd just like to maybe finish on Benjamin Lovett and... And then I'd like to very much to hear this music. One of the things that you did for me on the telephone, and I wanted to see if I could get a few more things out of it for you... the picture just seemed to die in the written word, and I had related that to you, that it started out saying in one account that I read over there, the man evidently seemed very honest and said that he felt that Mr. Ford had turned senile, and that Benjamin Lovett's, if you want to call it his swan song, and with Ford was a very sad one, that he related that the last time he went to see Mr. Ford didn't even know who he was, and that things became very sad for Mr. Lovett, and that the ending to what was a great era, you know, and a lot of pleasant thoughts ended very sadly. And it was kind of a traumatic experience for Mr. And then after that, I guess, even worse, dealing with the executives who took over.
Yeah, I guess that's one reason I turned my efforts another direction. Because I could see that things were fast drawing to a close.
Mm-hmm.
Even before Mr. Ford died. It's true that he was senile at times. But at other times, he'd go for days and weeks. No problem, just as sharp as a tack. And then these attacks would come. Maybe they'd only last a day or two. But that was enough. He had to be kept, you know, protected from the public at those times. And since I worked on the fourth floor of the powerhouse up there, which is where he kept all his mementos, and I did a little odd jobs for him, he'd be very different at times, you know. Terrible. I don't know how many times, must have been 3-4 times anyway, right close together, you know, in a fairly close period of time, that he told me about his problems with the Jewish bankers in New York and how they'd tried to steal his company from him. His version of it, see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's
okay.
The since you were so close to Mr. Lovett, I guess see, that time he was upset, I suppose, wasn't he?
Lovett? Now that, geez, pardon me, I just want to make this one point. I worked, Lovett was my immediate boss.
Right.
Mr. Ford was my big boss. There was nobody in between or whatever. So, a good part of the time I was working on the estate in this room, as I told you, for Mr. Ford. Lovett could have been a million miles away. And other times I'd be with Lovett for weeks at a time. Never seen Mr. Ford. So it's hard to explain the whole situation.
Not only that, but Mr. Lovett was not a person to show his emotions that much, or show his feelings or tell his feelings.
You know, I guess I believe you were the one that told me that his retirement was just one last dance, and he announced it on the mic and had his car packed, and he just left. That was it. Nobody knew.
He had his retirement party with the Country Club.
Mm-hmm.
I called that party for him, and Mrs. Ford was there. It was the last time she was out public. She sat up in the balcony and watched the dancers. And Mr. Lovett did say a few words. In fact, we had him call one set of dances for the farewell gesture.
Mm-hmm.
Most everybody knew Lovett.
Yeah, I kind of saw the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't know, after they moved
out. I won't tell you what he said to me. He left me with the whole shebang, see, he told me that. And then he made a few comments as to how I should behave myself and that I'd never, ever have to want for anything if I did as he told me.
That's interesting. Well, when he left, was that the end of it, or was he provided for, say, a pensioner?
I doubt that, but I don't
know. No, he didn't. No, he wasn't like the servants over there. I mean, he was well above then. And
I think they would feel that he had made so much money during the years that he worked there.
Yeah, he did.
I imagine his pay raises were
very substantial.
Substantial with the times.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have an office there? He operated
Yes.
In
Lovett Hall.
Mm-hmm.
He used to have a cute little way of calling some of us in. He'd maybe see us around the building somewhere. He'd say, "Come in my office." We go in there. You never knew what was going to happen. You could be done. You could be anything. And I'll never forget this one time.
Terrible.
So I'm going to chastise you now. And he proceeded to give us a series of rules on how to smoke. Most of it went right in one ear and out the other. But I remember him showing us how to hold a cigarette between your fingers. And he says, "You see, you should always keep it up here. Keep it up here." He says, "You let it down, it goes up your cuff. It goes right up your coat sleeve, and that will smell for hours and hours." He says, "You can't put a mint up your coat sleeve."
Mr. Ford was death on smoking.
Oh.
Nobody dared smoke there. And he was around.
And Mr. Lovett did smoke?
In the room.
Mr. Lovett smoked.
Yeah.
I don't know how I got away with it.
That's something. You suppose that, not prying into it, after Benjamin Lovett told you this, then you were in charge of the program.
Yeah, but there wasn't any program.
So it didn't work out? You say that you
no,
could
we
be taking...
went into our own business then.
And
had our own
and
business.
Went to the city tour.
I see.
I was their first and last dance master.
With Dearborn, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe...
for the city. Recreation.
Was it Mr. Lovett's idea or Mr. Ford's idea to start getting the record business going?
I think that was kind of forced on Henry. It would have been done through Lovett. I mean, I'm sure he was the one that... that was a feather in his cap, too.
Sure.
He would say, "People all over the country here, they want records. Settle for newspapers."
Mr. Lovett, was he aggressive like that or ambitious? I imagine he must be if he
was. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. It'd be hard not to be when you had Henry Ford behind you, I suppose.
Yeah,
you could.
It was somebody else's money you were working with.
Sure, that makes it very easy.
But he was the personification of a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
He was strict.
I heard that he was not
a
above...
A lot of them were scared of him.
I heard that he was not above correcting people no matter what their station was.
Oh, that's right. He felt that was his duty, and Mr. Ford had...
That's what he was hired for, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, this business of craftsman knees and all that, that's true, and he wouldn't stand for any monkey business of you walking across the ballroom in the, during an intermission or anything.
The only one that would do something to upset him was Mr. Ford.
And he...
He would deliberately do just the opposite from what he said.
Remember one time he walked in? Went straight across the ballroom. Mr. Ford never did that ordinarily. And because he knew Lovett had just given a lecture on ballroom etiquette. And he sat down next to the piano player on the bench, put his feet up on the grand piano. No, real absolute no-no. And, yeah.
He's been trying for Benjamin Lovett.
Yeah.
Trying, he turned 14 different colors.
Do you think Ford was just doing it to be cute, and was he trying to put him in his place?
Sure, that too.
What was the not knowing myself? Were you to walk around the perimeter? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
And to walk across was.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Well, maybe we could, the records now, and I understand that you have the last copy of what has been left of the entire collection. You told me some of them burned and when they were going to repress them or something.
I don't know if they ever did anything over at the village about that or not. But, see, that's one thing I was left. All the masters...
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll have to go in the other room.
Okay, you have him over in there.
Okay. I'll just...
record player is there.
Okay. I'm going to turn this tape over anyhow.
1734, known as the Aim, played by Emil Herman. Viola of 1731, known as the Paganini, played by Herman Kolodkin. Cello of 1730, known as The Fall, played by Bernard Argerich. They will now play an old English air, drink to me only with thy knowledge.
Sorry,
that's
all
right.
Thank
you. That's
right.
I wanted to explain something. Here. Maybe you might want to make a little comment before you start.
Mm-hmm.
I found that, generally speaking, if we can stand it on this table, and use this table,
mm-hmm.
and get the bigger speaker.
Oh.
Well, here, let's get that right. Can you turn it? Is this your mic?
Right here. Right there.
Right there, just like mine.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Turn it this way?
Turn it up.
Like that.
Well, will it stand that way?
Well, let's see.
No.
Like this.
No, how about it?
Like that.
Yeah, that should pick it up real good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now. This record, along with some others I have, were one-of-a-kind made for Mr. Ford. We had a bill of sale for the bowl. As I say, they made one of each of these records, and then they destroyed them, the masters. And as you could see, they were mentioning the various Stradivarius violins that were used in this. Now, those are over in the village in the case.
Yeah, I've seen those.
They belong here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Okay, those are the instruments. Now, did you want to say something about it?
Yeah, the... These are the Stradivarius instruments that are at the Ford Museum, encased over there. And these are, as I have it now, one of a kind. Was it Mr. Ford that wanted these destroyed, the masters destroyed after he had them? They were just for his own private use.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
The quartet playing on famous Stradivari instruments. First violin of 1716, known as the Cecil, played by George Jackson. Second violin of 1734, known as the Ames, played by Emil Herman. Viola of 1731, known as the Paganini, played by Herman Kolodkin. Cello of 1730, known as the Paul, played by Bernard Argavich. They will now play an old English air, Drink to Me Only with Thine Eyes, played by Emil Herman. Viola of 1731, known as the Paganini, played by Herman Kolodkin. Cello of 1730, known as the Paul, played by Bernard Argavich. They will now play an old English air, Drink to Me Only with Thine Eyes.
Consider the Stradivarius and the fact that they weren't sound and they destroyed the instruments are Stradivarius.
He had three of those made. Those were for home listening at the mansion. Yeah.
That sounds unbelievable. Well, the man just spent that much money to
You notice the color of the plastic? Plastic there. Those were very, very old Columbia records.
Yeah, they're real.
None of these were ever published. The medley of reels I'd like to play for.
Mm-hmm.
That's by Ed Baxter, and he played dulcimer, Mr. Ford's orchestra. There was a dulcimer, which is an instrument played with little hammers. And then, well, I can tell you about the other instruments.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to hear you play this because it's an old Irish instrument. It's very difficult to play, and you can go.
It's a dulcimer.
What's
a dulcimer?
What?
It's dulcimer.
This is all in with the little hammers?
These were, wooden hammers.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's a dulcimer. And then there was another instrument that came years later and was of Hungarian origin.
Uh-huh.
It was twice as big, like a kitchen table. And that also used hammers, but they were padded. And then it had feet on it that could be depressed and change the tone. Now this, all right, you tell me, Oriental answers.
This is the Oriental answers. This is the orchestra. Later on, the one that they made for the public to buy the records from.
I see.
You want with or without calls?
Is this
with calls?
With calls.
Would that be Benjamin Lovett calling?
He called on some of them, and some of the teachers called on some. Dick was called on some.
Uh-huh.
They're not all Lovett on them.
Which one is this one?
Well, we'll have to wait.
You have to see it, I see. Didn't it advertise the caller on the record?
That's part.
That is Leo Phil Markowitz.
say forward again and address, is that like a bow or bow?
Yeah.
They call it an address?
Yeah, the ladies curtsy.
Uh-huh. Oh. And the chassé, is that sideways? Or
chassé is French for slide.
Slide.
Slide. See, the head couple, second couple, third couple, fourth couple and are all lined that way, facing that way.
Mm-hmm.
And slide through.
Is this the Gunnings?
They slide through.
Yeah.
Is this the Gunnings?
Gentlemen go in one way direction, the ladies the other direction. That's a keynote shot issue. Mm. Uptown, downtown?
No.
What did they mean when they say march?
March.
Well,
that's not a promenade.
No.
No, when they're in line like that, like I said, a couple, second, third, and fourth, in line after your chassé, and he says, all march. The ladies went that way, the gentlemen went that way,
okay.
And they came around and passed each other. So they ended up with all the ladies on that side, gentlemen on that side.
I see.
Facing
each other. And then they went forward and back.
Almost like, what was it, an old marching through Georgia, they used to be something like that. On an old...
It's
a lot.
What do you want
now? I'm going to just check that while you're doing, see how that's coming out.
Well, let's see. One that was very popular when I retired or whatever was the Gunnings Quadrille or the Grand Square.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever call it?
And the Grand Square, but not the
Gunnings Square. Gunnings?
No.
Well, the reason I asked you, see, that one, too, had something to do with the Fords. Gunnings was a fellow that used to call out at Botsford Inn. That's out Grand River by
mm-hmm.
Mile. It's a great big place now. It was just a country tavern. And... So Gunnings was over to the village. The old man had him over there one time. And Gunnings didn't know of music, actually. But he said if Ford would have somebody take the music down, it was all right with him if he wanted to use the dance, too. The music and the dance. So this is the Gunnings Quadrille of the Grand Square.
Okay. The one that you...
Mm-hmm. Head lady and opposite gentleman, forward and swing in the center. Thank you.
This is the orchestra you worked with after that dance with the...
Yeah.
Love retired. You said you started your own orchestra.
Yeah, after a while. Mm-hmm.
Well,
any of there was on there with you, Colin?
That was me.
Oh, was that you on
the... Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you sat with this other fellow.
No.
I
no, that was on the other... Electric.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Very good. Have you got any of there with Benjamin Levitan?
Yeah, honey.
Yeah. I kind of try them out.
I could tell you.
Yeah.
What? Where they're facing... big circle around the room, but floors are facing country dance.
How many records do you suppose you have all together of the Ford collection?
150.
You don't mean 150 different ones, do you? How many did they record? Mm-hmm.
Hmm. They just picked out certain ones to sell over at the village.
I wonder if you don't mind telling me, was Mr. Lovett and Mr. Ford, what their reaction were to the records? Was Lovett pleased with them and thought it was a good thing? And was Ford pleased?
No, it's hard to explain that because... these records stretched over a period of many years.
Mm-hmm.
We've got them on the old Edison records.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that thick the records. No lead-in grooves or anything grooves. See, Ford played around with these things.
So. He didn't.
Plain quadrille, wasn't that Lama calling that one?
Plain quadrille?
Yeah.
I don't think so, but you can try it.
We used
the last program. Now this plain quadrille, this is a kind